Film Ball. Yes, indeed, it's a Film Ball. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Ball. That's Anderson.
Yeah.
I'm Ron Bishop, your host for today. Top 5 bad movies with great stories. I'll be honest, I'm pretty psyched about this category.
You are?
So a listener suggested top 5. That was oddly worded, but I was like, eh, that's an interesting category. We don't talk about bad movies that often, but when we do...
I don't like to do that.
Nor do I, but I like to talk... I look at this as movies we did once, top 5 movies that need to be remade.
And I actually pulled my list.
Oh, as did I.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that'll be good. It turns out that one of those deserves to be on this list, but okay. I didn't put it on. They were just movies that maybe like didn't age that
well. Yes, some are not so timely, et cetera, et cetera.
I had a really hard time with this one, and I'm kind of proud of myself, which doesn't happen very often, Bri-Bri, but
I thought
about it. This is not a list that you can lean on internet compiled lists or research. It just has to come from your own mind. I know that I've done a bunch, at least 4 or 5 recently within the last couple of years, where I'm like, this is a great story, but it needs to be remade. And I don't remember what those were. The weird thing, the odd thing about me, this might be you too, Bri.
What's that?
But like, if I don't like a movie, I just don't really think about it anymore.
I agree.
It does have
a way of going away.
Yeah, it's not like I spend time thinking about it. And I'm not a story guy. I'm a character guy. I don't really care about stories
because
they're all fake.
I took story to mean as concept, idea, it had something. You know what I mean? It was
some of my favorite movies. The story is very meh, but the characters are so colorful and memorable and great dialogue that the story. A lot of time, I'll be honest, I don't even care what's going on
really
with the story.
I didn't take story quite so literally, but I know what you're saying. A couple of them jumped to mind for me, and then a few I had to think about and look through movies I had rated on Netflix and see what I get 1 star to, or like really bad movies. And there were a couple that jumped up. I have a good also ran list where I was like, not a good movie, but I had high hopes for this. I thought it sounded good. I thought there was something to look good about it, and no.
I got a solid list, and I got one movie on here that's never been discussed by myself ever before that I hadn't thought about in years, and I pulled it, Brian. I pulled it from the dark, deep recesses of my brain.
I was going to say, actually, looking at my list, I don't know if I've mentioned these.
There'll be no crossover.
If I've mentioned these, that'll be shocking if there is. It'll be briefly, maybe one Flick Fest years ago, but these are not movies that get a lot of run on this show.
Let's Flick Fest. While we're speaking of it.
Let's confess the flicks we've seen in the past week.
I got 3.
You got 3? Look at you, overachiever.
I had to do one. I was going to do it for the show that we already banked. We did a show that's going to air in a couple weeks.
We did.
Because Logan, fuckhead that he is going to be out of town. So
grooming it up in Mexico.
We decided to we did a full episode. That thing had to be over an hour.
I think it's
hour
actually
20,
at least
hour 30.
As long
for
as
sure.
Typical.
And we had some fun there, especially towards the end.
It got pretty silly.
It did. It got good. We flicked fast, and we did Red Light, Green Light with Diana Van de Kamp.
Still laughing at my story. Stupid.
I remember I lost my shit at least once on that episode. We got a little more loose than normal, but it's worth checking out once you see it in the feed in a couple weeks. But
do not skip the listener questions episode that comes up, because there are embarrassing stories about celebrity interactions.
It's true. From Brian's point of view. But I was going to save a movie for that one, but I couldn't. And you'll see why by the end of this episode.
Okay. Okie doke.
Why don't I begin?
Please.
Since I got 3?
Yeah, that's good.
I saw a film.
You're clicking.
Yeah, that means you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Hereditary. Directed by Ari Aster.
How do people, a few people hitting me up on Twitter tell me to see this? So, do I need to see this?
You're a tough one, and I don't know if this is marketed to Bri-Bri. This is interesting in the sense that it's rating fairly high on the old Rotten Tomatoes with the critics, the snobby ones. However, the users are not enjoying themselves nearly as much. I think it's in the low 50s for the users, and I think like 80s for the critics over there. Hereditary is directed by Ari Aster. It's his feature debut. It is starring, hold the phone, everybody. Hold the phone, because my link does not work, so I have to actually...
I see Toni Collette.
Toni Collette is in this, yes. This is starring Toni Collette, Millie Shapiro, who I'll talk about more later. She is the young daughter of Toni Collette in this film. She plays Charlie. Gabriel Byrne, who I've not seen in quite some time. I think he's lost himself to TV land.
Been missing.
I think he's been in TV land. And Alex Wolff plays the son. So it's like she's got like a 12-year-old. Gabriel Byrne and Toni Collette have like a 12-year-old daughter, maybe 13. Yeah, she's 13. And Alex Wolff's her older brother. He's probably like 17, 16, 17. Now, have you seen The Witch? No, you have not, Brian.
No, I have not.
But I'm talking to a listener. Have you seen The Witch? Did you like The Witch? Did you like the tone of The Witch? Okay, if you answered yes to that, you're going to enjoy Hereditary. It's done in the same tone, same style. Not the same style, because The Witch was really of its, like, set in it was a period piece, okay, and they all spoke a little bit different. But the tone and the reality of the commitment to the story was very similar to Hereditary. The Shining is that probably an easier example to
this looks very frightening.
To. Now, what I like about Hereditary is it's a cerebral film with zero jump scares. I think there's I actually made it a point while watching this thing. It's 2 hours and 7 minutes. It takes its time. And I was prepared to hate this, and a lot of horror fans, they like to be scared, and like they expect their jump scares, and I think jump scares are cheap.
Yeah,
it's like fart humor or dick jokes, right? Which
hilarious.
My wife keeps reminding me of how many dick jokes there are in Groupers, and I'm like, yes, honey, that's part of it, but there's a lot more to it. All right, a lot of dick jokes. She keeps saying, anyways, they're cheap. You know, jump scares, like, oh, the cat just jumped up on the windowsill, and then with a boom.
We should do a top five jump scares.
We could totally do that.
It's great one, Alien.
Listen, there's none in this one, which I think is fantastic. I applaud that. I really enjoy that, because I don't like being scared, and especially for no fucking good cause. If you're going to scare me. Now, there are some horrific things to look at. Also, this conjures, easy to say, but The Exorcist, especially where it all ends up. Toni Collette acts her fucking balls off in this movie. She is phenomenal. She's committed. There's a lot of extreme close-ups with her just emoting, my God.
Wow.
Like, she's worthy of an Oscar nod.
Is that A24?
I don't think this is the right vehicle for that, and I don't think it's the right time of year, so I think she'll be forgotten. But my God, does this woman act her ass off in this movie. She plays... So here's the story. Her mom is dead, freshly dead, right after the movie begins, right? They're going to a funeral, and the whole family is kind of like, grandma's gone. Mm. I should feel sad, but I don't. She was kind of a bitch. She's kind of a weird lady, compartmentalized a lot of her life. You learn that. And Toni Collette had a complicated relationship with her mother, which you pick up on pretty quick, right? There's a box of grandma's stuff, and she starts to open it, and she looks through a couple photo albums. She's like, I don't want to touch it. It's like, it makes me feel icky. You learn that grandma... I kind of lost her mind, and she was in and out of the family's life, but then she was living with them the last few years before she took the big nap, Brian, before she took the big sleep. And you also learn that she tried to get close to the son, but was kind of pushed away, and then she really got close to the daughter, the 13-year-old daughter, played by the aforementioned Millie Shapiro, who has a very unique face. Why don't you look her up real quick?
I'm doing that right now.
I'm being careful not to talk too much about Millie Shapiro's face, because she's a young actress, and I did research trying to find out what's going on with her face, and I found nothing but her beautiful acting and her singing voice and things that she's done. She's got some kind of condition, and it's not something readily available on the internet. She was perfectly cast in this.
Interesting. I see what you're saying. Yes, it's instantly recognizable.
An odd bird. She spends her time, she's special, you get that sense. She's got a peanut or nut allergy, which comes into play. And she spends her time cutting up like old trash and making it into little figures. Like, that's what she does. And she draws pictures, and she makes people. One of the lines was the son, Alex Wolff, is hitting on this girl. Like, he's at a party and he's talking to this girl while they're smoking weed in the bedroom at its house party. And she goes, oh, your sister is Charlie? He goes, yeah. And she's like, she drew a picture of me last week, made me look retarded. And then he says, yeah, that's Charlie. If she just draws, she's just an odd bird, right? There's a scene where a pigeon gets hits a glass pane window, right, in glass, And she goes out and she cuts the head off and makes that
so she ain't
into
right.
a little creature. Yeah. Now, where this movie goes.
As Hank Hill would say, that boy ain't right.
More on that in 2 weeks, Brian. See, you can't fuck with the timeline here on the Film Vault because we haven't done that
I'm
episode
all over,
yet.
I'm all over the place.
So, this deals with the occult, Greek mythology, actual spells, and the Bible to an extent. And so, okay, there's a lot going on that I think will go over most people's heads, mine included. And it's the kind of movie that lends itself to critics losing their shit over. Toni Collette, she creates miniatures. She's an artist.
Okay.
And she does miniatures of her house and her bedrooms. And she's got this gallery coming up that's a big part of a showing at a gallery that's a big part of the storyline. There's something there that, you know, you as an audience member are supposed to like connect and be like, oh, yeah, you know, it's smart. It's smart, a little bit too smart for its own good at times.
Okay.
This thing's shot beautifully. From the beginning, you realize that Ari, despite the fact that it's his first feature film, everyone just makes great fucking movies now. We just have to realize that. Like, everyone's a film student. Everyone has access to all of the greats, and they can study them. And once they get their hands on a camera, they can do amazing things with these cameras.
I think it's a big
this
thing,
one
too.
Included.
It's an A24 production, and they crank out some pretty great movies these days. I think they're a very nurturing environment for young filmmakers. Like, they surround them with, I imagine, access to well, good DPs and good editors and, you know, that type of thing.
Well, yeah, if they funded this thing, and I don't know how that all worked or how it came to be. I'm assuming they fell in love with a script, which is a very unique script, a very original script.
Right.
The Omen comes to mind for sure when watching this. It feels like an old classic, you know, satanic stylized 70s horror film, but quality.
Did it work as a horror film?
That's, I think, where the user rating is a little low is because they were hoping for jump scares and more slasher. And there's one scene in particular, which I don't dare talk about, that is holy fuck.
You're about to talk about
it. And it's my favorite, but it's what I'm going to remember about this movie 10 years from now, this situation that a character is put in after a horrific event happens, and we get to see that character step by step, how that character deals with this unspeakable occurrence that happened, and how they don't deal with it, and they just go to bed instead. And you put yourself in that place. I don't put myself in the character's place very often. Mm-hmm. I did that in this scene. Ugh. Like, what would I do? How do you deal with this? Right. And ultimately, we see some really fucked up imagery from that said scene, which I can't talk about. And once it's all wrapped up and with a nice little bow at the end, which might probably set it up for a sequel, if it gets that kind of love at the box office, maybe there will be a sequel. I would go see what happens after this because I'm kind of curious. Oh. However, leading up to that, there are some moments where I wasn't the only one laughing in the theater, and I don't think that you were supposed to be laughing.
Okay.
Now, there were some shortcomings where I think they expected you or needed the audience to buy in to an extent that you wouldn't laugh at some ridiculous
right.
imagery that leads up, especially for that final scene, which wraps it all up. But here's an example of how you're taken care of as an audience member as far as the camera and what the director and DP are doing. It opens up with a shot through a window. You're inside the house, and you're looking through the window of this really amazing there's like four birch trees, right? It okay. takes place in, they shot it in Utah. I'm not sure where it takes place, but they shot it in Utah. Four birch trees are equally distance apart, and a house, like almost like a log cabin is built within those four posts of those trees. So it's like 30 feet off the ground. Okay. Like, this house is built. It's really remarkable, and it looks great. That's shot through the window, right? The camera starts to pan right now, right? It's on a tripod, and it's just moving very steadily, and you're seeing this room that has all these miniatures in it because it's her work studio right. at her house. And then it stops on this one house that's open, like one of those old Fisher-Price houses, like, you know, little kid houses that you play with where they fold open. You can see the different rooms, and it slowly pushes in on a bedroom, right? And it slowly pushes in and pushes in. And at some point, through the magic of VFX and CGI, it becomes a real room, but it's seamless, and you don't see it happening. And the son is asleep in his bed in there, and that's where the first clue that, oh my god, this is just became a real room now, and we're actually in the room. It's that's how the movie
I'm
opens.
Intrigued.
And
more so than I normally am for a horror film like this.
It's it's not a horror film in the conventional sense, much like The Witch was not a horror film in the conventional sense, much like The Shining was not a horror film in the conventional sense. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, The Shining was actually shit upon when it first came out. Critics hated it, and audiences really did not like it. And
I've actually never all seen
these,
it.
These years later. But I don't scream, you have to go see Hereditary, but I'm very happy I did.
Okay.
And
sell an endorsement.
Like I said, with the end ending up as it did, which I did not see coming, if something more were to come out of this, like, say, a second, I would be in. Mm. I would definitely be in. So that's the that's Hereditary there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm intrigued. I don't know if this is someone to rush out and see. Maybe if I'm assigned it, I'll have to, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. It's just like everyone's a master filmmaker. Like if this came out,
it's kind of like how all cars that come out are like. Remember, they used to be just crappy cars.
TVs, look at TVs.
Yeah, cars used to be just crappy cars. Like if you got this car, you got a piece of junk. Every car today is at least above average.
Except for the ones that give away on Price is Right. Those are bare bones.
Are those even real cars?
Yeah.
I mean, what I mean is like
they're all like manual transmission, right. And they're the pretty, lowest of low.
Okay, well I
don't even have a place to keep your change.
I don't even watch that show. Really? How do you know that?
I just made
it's that a weird thing.
I threw that in.
Strange thing to make up.
Hereditary.
Okay, Hereditary.
It's not nearly as fun as like one of those movies that I liked that with Joe Bob.
Fast and the Furious.
No. Those horror films that have been coming out to like
with the Paranormal Activity.
No.
The Purge.
Last couple of years there's been a few of them.
Insidious.
No. Fuck. Lily Mama, Taylor Mama. Was in the one.
Mama.
And I really liked them. Like The Conjuring. Yeah, The Conjuring. Yeah, there was like the whole like series of those.
Sure. Paddington.
Not Paddington. No, Paddington is not the right answer. But those are more fun. They got jump scares and there's more like, you know, engagement, I think. This one is more cerebral and I think that's a problem. Like, a lot of it went over my head, for sure. I think that if I was well-versed in spells and the occult and Greek mythology, which is referred to a few times, you can tell like there's little hidden gems all over this movie.
For people who are into that kind of stuff.
Into that kind of shit or just really well-read.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw a film. Mm. I'll be interested to see if you saw it too. Ocean's 8.
What would you say?
Did you see Ocean's 8?
Did you really go see Ocean's 8?
It's number one at the box office. I feel like I have a duty.
Why?
You didn't see it?
No.
Okay. Ocean's 8.
Brian.
It's a big theater movie in theaters.
It's a fucking cash grab bullshit.
I understand that, but I felt an obligation.
What is the rating of it?
It's super high. Look, and what is this on Rotten Tomatoes?
I think we gambled on this.
So maybe don't say it. But it's like
I protest this.
I think
movie.
It's like in the 80s.
I protest.
It's not that high.
I think it's like in the 60s.
I think I win.
Yeah, I think you do. I think I guess much lower than that. I actually have no recollection.
Oh, was it any good?
Directed by Gary Ross.
God, this is so fucking milquetoast and
safe. Director. Well, speaking of which, director of Seabiscuit. You ever see Seabiscuit?
Yes.
Director of Pleasantville.
You know, they didn't put the best part of Seabiscuit. Well, it's not the best part. It's by far the worst part. But Seabiscuit, like a world-renowned, triple crown winning racehorse. His hoof, at least one of his hoofs, was made into an ashtray.
They didn't put that in the movie?
No. I had to read about that on my own.
Director of Pleasantville and Hunger Games, the original Hunger Games.
An ashtray.
Starring Sandra Bullock.
I love Sandy, too. I like her a lot. But I have no interest in seeing this. This movie is a... there's a part of the studio that I look into the corner of and my mind just goes blank.
Really?
It's the only show that I do where
really?
Like, there's a
just
section...
lose everything?
Yeah, and I need to not look at that.
Well, don't look at it.
The mind just goes blank. This is exploitation film is what this is.
Kate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Sarah Paulson, Helena Bonham Carter, Mindy Kaling, Awkwafina, Rihanna, Richard Armitage, and James Corden. James Corden in this film.
He shows up at the end.
He does. How would you know that?
I heard him in an interview, Brian. Nice fellow, that
I
James
thought you
Corden.
And I were going to discuss this, so this is going to be more of a monologue. Okay. There's a few...
No, I see movies that I think of the show as like a service, and I try and like let people know about movies that they should see, not movies that they're told to see.
There's a few problems with this movie, a few glaring problems with this movie. And let me just start off by saying we're talking about this week bad movies with good stories. We don't like talking about bad movies, especially, you know, if a movie's come out 20 years ago and it's not that good, then, you know, the time is kind of, you know, time has judged it for what it is. I don't like talking about movies that come out recently that are not good.
I don't mind talking about big movies that come out that are really good. I mean, that really bad. That are bad. I have no problem with that.
I don't know that this is a really bad movie, but there are a few glaring problems. Number
like,
one,
what are the problems?
Number one, most of all, why on earth does this need to be an Ocean's movie? Why is this called Ocean's 8? Why? So she is the sister of Danny Ocean. She's
because
Debbie.
It's a huge temple
no, I
movie
understand that,
that worked.
Sorry, these are storytelling problems. Why on earth? In the you didn't see this, did you, Logan? Why on earth, in the context of this film,
defiant? No,
is this an Ocean's film? It's actually, I felt similarly about Ghostbusters, like. Why did that movie have to be set in a universe where they, you know what I mean? Like,
I think it's really simple, Brian. I think that the
no,
fat cats.
I understand. I understand the business
I think
part of it.
No, I think they just see, like, they look at a franchise that worked, and they're like, but we only got 50%. Mm. We ignore the other 50%.
That's so.
We can get the other 50% if we just make them have vaginas.
That's so insulting. Not only to the people who they're aiming towards.
I think it's insulting to women.
I was going
to
say, forget about just the women they're aiming towards.
And I get shit for, like, you know, complaining and strifing against these movies. And I'll get emails like saying, why do you got to hate on this?
You know what it is? It's pandering.
It's absolute pandering, and it's exploiting an entire gender.
This could have very easily, Anderson, I'm telling you, been a standalone heist movie,
which I might have actually gone to see.
There is everything that's Oceans related, like that brings it into the Oceans universe, feels very slapped on.
Clooney, hop in there for a quick.
I'm not
going to
say whether he does or does not, but early in the film, Elliot Gould shows up out of fucking nowhere in a situation he does not belong in. Okay, how much should I talk about the this is not giving anything away. This is not even at the end of the first act. Like the
how did you see this?
I went to the theater. I used MoviePass.
I didn't ask how.
You said how to.
I said why.
Oh, they said how.
And don't say because it was number one in the box office.
No, because it was
not a good reason.
Well, it was a big movie. I thought you would see it just because it's a movie.
Brian, you know me, buddy. Come on.
I didn't think you'd enjoy it, but I thought it was a movie.
There's
you'd
some good movies that came out this week, and I had choices.
There are. The Elliot Gould scene was ridiculous, and I thought to myself, is this how they're going to rope shoehorn is the word, this movie into the universe, because it does not have any, and as I'm going, I'm thinking, like, every time some reminder pops up that, oh yeah, she's his sister or something, I'm like, this didn't need to be. This probably existed as a script without any reference to Ocean, like it probably exists as a standalone heist movie. Problem number one. Also, again, you haven't seen it. There's no antagonist. There's no villain. There's no bad guy.
Is that getting caught?
No, she's trying to get revenge at one point on a boyfriend who wronged her and sent her to jail, or framed her and sent her to jail. But that is very much a subplot. Like, and again, I would feel normally uncomfortable about, like, comparing it to Ocean's 11, but since they've done it for me, let's go ahead and throw it out there. Like, in Ocean's 11, there was the Terry Benedict character.
Andy Garcia.
He was great because he was the guy they were trying to rob.
And
he was a casino owner.
Yeah.
He was a smug bastard, and he was dating his ex-girlfriend. Right. Like, there was a whole layer. This fucking, like, there's no villain in this movie. There's no antagonist. Like, they're not, like.
Maybe they did some research and test research and realized that women don't like antagonists.
I actually thought to myself at one point when I'm like, who's the bad guy? I'm like, I hope they didn't soften it. I hope they didn't, like, go a soft route for that.
I bet they did. Now, who's this for, too? Like, to put Elliot Gould in there? Because if they're thinking, like, this is a whole new audience,
right,
they got to assume that this audience didn't see the first three.
Or is not going to be like, oh, thank God, he's back. Like, eh. So another storytelling problem, and this is probably a problem with the original script. Very little, Anderson, goes wrong for them. Remember in Ocean's 11 when, like, remember the power grid went out?
So that's what makes the movie.
Yeah, because they have to keep thinking. Very, very, very little doesn't go exactly.
You ever see the original Ocean's?
No. In fact, I own it on DVD.
With the Rat Pack?
It was given to me as a gift. I've never opened it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be very boring.
That sounds like a very Brian movie.
It's supposed to be very boring.
Uh-huh.
I did that with you and...
The Man With No Name trilogy.
The Dollar Trilogy. So, this is not a good movie.
Okay. I'm glad we
it's very and you know what's really a problem too? It feels
Gary Ross.
It feels like a Steven Soderbergh cover band. Like, it's got that rhythm and popping and the thing. Remember how like they would have the transitions where like the screen goes like zip, zip, zip. Mm-hmm. You remember like it would transition with the lines going up, yes, and the bars going, mm-hmm, up and down. It has a lot of that. It feels like a cover band that knows the music, but like knows the words, but doesn't know the
any
music.
Good characters that had like zippy lines. I saw the one, yes, that
that's the thing. That's the hard thing.
Rihanna tells her, her real name.
That's the hard thing about this movie is,
she's like, 8 Ball. What's your real name? 9 Ball.
9 Ball. I'm not convinced this is very good, but but it does at least have some. The characters, the actresses seem like they're having fun. The characters are.
The ladies that they're targeting to go see a movie drag their boyfriends to go see it.
You know what, Logan? Can you actually look up the user?
My fiance wants to drag.
Yeah,
this
look
movie.
Up the look up the user score, because I would.
And don't hate on me for pointing out what is obvious. All right, this is not a political statement by me. It's just what the studios are doing, and and your girlfriends are falling for it, just like many boyfriends fall for fucking Vin Diesel driving cars that are fast. Okay,
yeah, I told her I owe her one from all the comic book movies I've dragged her to.
See, so it's almost like war.
This is not a punishment.
They're trying to get asses
in
the seat.
It's not great. Mm.
Wait, what am I looking for?
The user score of Ocean's 8, like the audience score, because I would bet it's pretty high.
52%.
Okay, it's pretty low.
Worse than the critics.
Wow.
But here's the thing too, and take this for what it's worth. Most of those reviews are from males. I mean, guys are using the app of the Flixster apps and the Rotten Tomato apps much more than girls are, I think.
You think you're the cynical one when it comes to studios. You know what I realized towards the end of the movie? The reason they made an Oceans, like made in the Oceans universe?
What's that?
Crossover. They're start bringing in characters from the other movies. Like, this is going to be a crossover event. Like, this is going to be like...
It's like they're Marvel.
This is going to be like Chick Avengers.
Well, I can tell you, I know that the studios are all looking for their own Marvel universe.
There will be characters.
They're doing it with Oceans.
Yeah, they're going to be crossovers.
I saw Oceans 11.
This is really depressing.
12, I just gave up on 13.
Yeah, I didn't bother seeing it either.
They're out of ideas, man. You know, especially for like the big giant ideas to get everybody, which is sad because there's a lot of great ideas, some of which we'll be talking about later on this episode, that just were not executed properly.
The fundamental storytelling problems are really frustrating with this movie. Anyway,
I saw a film.
I will not be assigning this to you.
Thank you. Coming to your
this
senses.
This week.
I saw a film.
What is it?
Do you remember the movie The Imposter 2012? It's a documentary.
No. What is it about?
A young man of Spain who claims to a grieving Texas family that he is their 16-year-old son who has been missing for 3 years.
No.
You don't remember this? I have to look fast at it. It's fascinating.
You say it's a Spanish movie?
No. He's a he's
it's a
man
documentary.
Of Spain. It's a documentary.
Oh, no.
Did I not say it's a documentary?
I don't think you did.
Huh, stupid. All right.
If you did, I missed it.
It's a fascinating documentary.
Is it R-rated documentary?
Could be. I don't know. That's not really the point of this. That director.
Now he convinces the family they're who? He's who?
That he's like, they're missing. They have a 16-year-old son who had been missing for 3 years. And then he's like, hey, I'm him.
Oh, he directed. Okay, I know what you're doing. Yeah, sorry.
So that's Bart Layton directed that. This is his follow up, some 6 years later. And it's called American Animals.
I've been hearing good things.
American Animals. American Animals tells a story of the 2003 Transy book heist, which apparently was a famous heist, which I guess I'm not well read on my heists.
Guess but, not.
I wasn't familiar with it. Kentucky's Transylvania University. Here's how dumb I am. I didn't even know that Transylvania University was a thing. Hmm. Is that where people go to learn to suck your blood?
It's good stuff.
Sorry, my apologies.
Don't do that. Don't ever do that again.
It's told in documentary style, much like Sweet and Lowdown. I don't know if you ever saw that. The man whose name we're not allowed to mention directed it. Hmm. Woody Allen.
Yes, I'm really
Sweet and Lowdown. Where he took the actual characters and breaks the fourth wall with them, has them talking head documentary style, explain what's actually happening within the story you're watching. So technically, I'm calling American Animals a documentary.
Really?
Because
there's actors
same
playing roles.
Like I would as Sweet and Lowdown, but it's reenactment.
Okay.
Much like documentaries where you reenact a lot of the shit. A good documentary will have talking heads and then they'll do reenactments. Now, 85%, 90% of this is reenactment, but they go to the actual three main characters that are involved in this book. So all right, here's a story that you need to know. 2003, there's these young, white, privileged, not super privileged, but they're privileged kids that it starts out with two who they're hanging out and just looking for a direction in life, and they're in college, Transylvania College. Brian learned it at Suck Blood in Kentucky, right. And they don't really have passion. And the one kid, I didn't even say who's in this fucking movie. Hold on, why are my links not working?
I don't recognize a lot of the names. Evan Peters.
The main reason why I went to see it was the cast, which is rare for me, because I don't really care for. Cast a lot of time, but I love that Evan Peters and I love Barry Keoghan. Keegan.
I'll tell you in a second.
Here we go, American Annals. So it stars Evan Peters, Barry Keoghan, and Blake Jenner. Now, Blake Jenner, he comes in late to the story. You're going to recognize him from Everybody Wants Some.
Okay.
Linklater baseball movie from a couple years ago. That was very fun. Real likable guy in that. He's the lead in Everybody Wants Him. Here he plays like a snobby prick, aggressive prick a little bit. Evan Peters, of course, is Quicksilver or whatever you want to call him from the X-Men.
Oh,
Who does the running around. He's also in American Horror Story. I really like him. And Barry Keoghan is in Dunkirk. He's the younger brother on the boat with Rylance.
Mark Rylance.
Mark Rylance is his father. And then also, more importantly, he's in the Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he kills it in The Killing of a Sacred Deer, which you have not seen yet.
I have not.
Oh, shit.
Well, I catch up.
Come on now. So it was mainly Evan Peters and Barry Keoghan. I'm like, I like those two actors. They got something about them. And I'm really interested in seeing this movie. It was kind of off my radar. And so the Barry Keoghan character, who he's like a little nebbish. He's got like a weird style to him.
Okay.
He is directionless, and he's got like a bit of a live wire friend in Warren. Warren is played by Evan Peters, he lets him know that, hey, I was on a little tour of our library today, and it turns out that they got this fucking book up stairs in the rare book section of the library that's worth like $19 million.
Jesus.
And they got like that one. Oh, what was the name? It's a bunch of paintings of birds and stuff.
Okay.
And then they also had the Charles Darwin Origin of Species book, like the original in there. And so these priceless books are in there. So they start to like get together and scheme, like, how could we steal these? Let's do this. Then they realize that the story, that they need more muscle. So they bring in Eric Borzik, played by Jared Abramson. He was great in it. Udo Kier.
Udo Kier.
He makes a brief appearance in the movie as well.
Nice. Very recognizable character, actually.
In Amsterdam. He comes up on the show quite a bit, and I never know how to say his name. And we follow their scheming and their style differences in how to go about getting these books. And then we right up to the heist. And it's directed too well.
Really?
If that makes sense.
How's that so?
Because the stakes are just not high enough for the level of intensity that is going into each scene. And that's my biggest problem with this movie. Like, the story just wasn't big enough for the style that the movie was actually directed and shot in. I liked it. And, you know, there was some funny... I'm sure it was supposed to be funnier than I found it to be, where they'd go to the actual real-life heister, right? A kid now 20 years later. Talking about his part in it, they did some like crossover where like they actually have him sitting the okay. One guy they have Warren Lipka, the real Warren Lipka, sitting in the car with Evan Peters, who's playing him, and he's like, "Is this how it happened? I don't know. I'm going with whatever you said. Like, it's supposed to be funny, and it just didn't really land." But the use of music and pacing, it was like a war film. But like at the end of the day, it's just like three, maybe four white kids trying to steal some books, and like their futures are on the line, but. Other than that, like the stakes just weren't there.
It's a top five low stakes movies, right? This would have been maybe a candidate.
I mean, the
books
it's
are valuable.
Four lives can be, you know, ruined or made by, you know, if they actually successfully pull this off. And the message was kind of, I realized that it was there, but it was kind of loose. I could show them watching heist movies. They're watching Kubrick's The Killing at one point. It's supposed to be like they're a product of their environment. They're a product of pop culture, right. And believing there's something that they're not. It just, he didn't hit you over the head with that, but at the same time, it didn't really lend itself to me going, oh, yeah, these kids don't even know who they are. They're just going, I think that's what he was going for. Like, these kids are empty husks of humans, and they're just, you know, living their lives the way that they're supposed to think that they're live their lives through movies. I didn't get that from it. the end of the day, it was just like.
Oh, it sounds like you liked it, but you're saying no?
It was okay. It was all right. I think the thing that I'm going to remember from the movie is, so the one main guy. These guys could have been on like dumb heist or dumb criminals too from a couple weeks ago.
Incompetent criminals.
The real Warren Lipka, he's the one that had probably had the least to lose, and he was like an athlete. They never even said what sport he got a scholarship for. He was at a different college, I think. They didn't make that quite clear, and how he even knew the Spencer Reinhardt character, who was played by Barry Keoghan, who's, I guess, the lead. But the real Warren Lipka, who they're doing interviews with for the movie. We see the talking head. He has a tattoo. This just gives you an idea of what kind of guy he is. Like a shaggy hair, right? And he thinks everything's kind of funny. And he's like, check this out. I got a tattoo. And it's like a tattoo of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, right? Like kind of crudely drawn. And he's reaching with his little arm up and turning off a ceiling fan. Like that's his tattoo. That's what I'll remember about this movie more than anything else. Evan Peters plays that guy.
Okay.
And in real life, that's the tattoo that he actually has.
That's pretty good.
And I kind of love that tattoo. And he's just like a goofball. Like, he's just, you know, let's have some fun. Let's actually do something with our lives. We're doing nothing. They live in Kentucky, and they just, they're looking for direction. It just doesn't land.
It's too bad.
It's so well made, though. Like, that's the problem. Movies are so well made now, even when, like, this, like, I don't know what the tone of this should have been, or maybe, like, they didn't need to make a movie about these goofballs. I don't know. It seemed to be too intense for the subject matter.
Yeah.
It didn't match up. I was never really nervous, even though like the movie was telling me to be nervous. But I was like, I don't give a fuck if they get the books or not. I don't care.
Yeah, but that's a feat of directing, though. I guess making you care would be the ultimate feat.
And the characters just weren't that likable either.
Mm.
They weren't hateable. They just kind of were like these dumb fuck kids. Like, just go to school. Shut up. Mm. Stop with your heist idea. And there's a lot of obstacles, and at times it got kind of like. It goes wearing on me, like, all right, now what? You just figure it out and go with it. There's a lot of buildup. It was almost like the Lufthansa heist. But
Jimmy!
It was a very, very Goodfellas-esque in that sense, yeah. But I just didn't care.
Okay, well, getting back on track. This is rare that we have so many new movies to FlickFest and that neither of them have been seen by both of us.
Well, because there was nothing, no giant movie other than Oceans, which I saw for what it was, and I made the wise choice.
Well, I saw a film. This is nice. We're casting a wide net. This is good. We're covering a lot of ground. I saw a film in theaters. Came up on our Sundance preview episode. 99% of Rotten Tomatoes, Anderson. It's a documentary. Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Oh, won't you be my neighbor? I want to see this badly.
Won't You Be My Neighbor is a 2018 documentary.
Who's the one prick that doesn't like this?
Yeah, who gave us a bad review? Logan, look up and give us a bad review. Directed by Morgan Neville. Morgan Neville is the director of a film that I loved called 20 Feet from Stardom. 20 Feet from Stardom. Won the Oscar, didn't it?
I believe it did.
The documentary, of course, focuses on Fred Rogers, a.k.a. Mr. Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. His one of his catchphrases, or I guess lyrics from his song, Won't You Be My Neighbor, lends the title. Currently, as we tape this in 29 theaters currently, I think it's expanding because they have some advertising on IMDb. I'm looking at it right now.
I think they're hesitating. I think that they believe that this could be a wide net movie.
Yeah, I think this is going to appeal to a lot of people. Yeah. It's a feel good movie. Obviously, everyone
knows Mr. Rogers.
I was going to say, that's a through line from children from the 60s to, I imagine they're still showing Mr. Rogers today somewhere, right?
I don't know. I watch a lot of kids shit with my boy.
Even on public television?
Like I told you, Daniel Tiger took his place.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't think that...
He died semi-recently, like after 2000, like 2003, I think.
It's not that semi-recently.
Well, I consider like... I always thought him as a very old man, and he wasn't. He would have been 90 this year. Mm. Isn't that crazy?
So how was it?
Let's see. 99% of Rotten Tomatoes. So Mr. Rogers, so they smartly, pretty quickly, and actually a couple times, address the whole is he gay thing. Of course.
Fucking cares?
Well, did you not have the thought at one point in your life as a teenager or something like Mr. Rogers was totally gay? Right?
No, I never really did. I always thought it was weird that a grown man is like taking off his clothes in front of you and being so friendly.
If not gay, there's something up with him and kids.
Yes, for sure. That's a question that would be asked.
Right.
But back then he was just like the kindly old man that was like lived in your neighborhood.
I think there was enough questions and enough urban legends. I'm going to say rumors. They're not rumors. Urban legends, like, you know, Mr. Rogers, there was something up with him, which is really a very it's a sad reflection on us as people.
I don't think
society.
At the time, Brian, I think today and like maybe within the last 10, 15 years.
I'm telling
years.
You when I came of age, like in the 90s, at that point, there were like people who joke like, oh, Mr. Rogers, obviously child molester, totally gay or whatever.
Okay, yeah, obviously, but I think when he's being stupid. Where does this movie start?
Movie starts with him starting the show in like, I think it was the 60s.
Now,
it was
now, like that's what 60s. I'm asking. The question, was that being questioned
no,
then?
No.
I
don't know.
I think his first 20, 30 years.
Yeah, it came up as more of an existential thing. Like, you know, like his overarching question that people had. And there were a lot of people who thought that. And like I said, it's a very sad reflection on our society that we see someone who is too sweet and too squeaky clean and too nice.
For sure.
And we think to ourselves, there's got to be something up with this guy. There was nothing up with Mr. Rogers. He was a sweet, guileless, he had this childlike innocence where he wanted to help children. He saw it like as his mission on earth. They talk about how he didn't ever use those terms, but I read between the lines. Like, he was going to go into the seminary and be ordained. In fact, there was even a little news clip they showed from a local newspaper in wherever he was, Illinois, I think. It was like, oh, well, you know, local Fred Rogers to be ordained. And he was all ready to go. And he's like, let me take a little break and see if I want to get into like childhood development. And he was part of this group with like Dr. Spock, you know, who wrote Dr. Benjamin Spock, who wrote the books, and this whole revolutionary. No, this is how you actually talk to kids. Kids need to be talked to as like in a certain way. And because the thought back in the day, in the old days, was kids are meant to be seen and not heard.
You know,
you discipline them, you blah, blah, blah. And there's a whole new way of thinking, which is no, kids need to be talked to and have things explained to them and treat them like little adults and blah, blah, blah. It was very revolutionary. And he kind of spearheaded that in the public consciousness. But with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, it goes over the early days. The scenes of him singing are very sweet and very touching. He sang, he wrote all the songs himself.
Feels
and it's funny. It's funny because they address right away how he is very, they call it non-traditional, like a non-traditional television personality. The guy wasn't good on camera. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't, they
didn't have it.
They contrasted him against everything else that was going on TV for kids those days and how he was so different.
Howdy Doody.
Yeah. Everything was just pies in the face and you know, exactly.
And he was all
it's Howdy Doody time. And he's the quiet guy who's just talking to kids and letting them ask questions. And it was very revolutionary. It goes through how he became influential.
It's
and
one of those things that shouldn't have worked, but
exactly. Against all odds, he went for Congress.
They talk about the horrible fucking puppets?
Yeah, they talked a lot about
the puppets. I hated the puppets.
I found the puppets weird,
I'd watch the first 10 minutes of Mr. Rogers, and as soon as I'd hear that ding, ding, and I'd be like, I'm out.
To that point, I have no specific memories of Mr. Rogers. Like, oh, remember that episode when? But I'm always aware of him in my life.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's a lot of us.
I think I watched him a lot as a little kid. Like, I just, you know, would watch and learn. But when I started being more interested in entertainment things, I kind of, you know, tuned out because I found
it
very odd.
It for you.
It was also kind of grotesque, too. Those puppets were
very grotesque.
Very strange.
They all had rosacea. Like, they're heavy drinkers.
One thing they didn't have, and
why were their puppets heavy drinkers?
I don't know. They all had these gin blossoms.
They were cunts, too.
Yeah, some were not nice. And they get into that. They were proxy for other people in his life. They said this one was a lot like this person. Anyway, they get into that. One thing they didn't have, and I understand why, but God, what would I have given for footage, like outtakes of a pissed off Mr. Rogers? Because if you
get it with The Simpsons,
right? But I'm saying I wanted to see Mr. Rogers lose his shit. Because
what do
you
mean?
You know,
what do you mean? I can't take off my sweater. It's hot.
One of my favorite lines in The Simpsons ever.
It's an all-time great. You know that taping that many TV shows, you know he lost it once or twice.
I don't know. You have people in your life that are just like, they just don't lose it. Like, they're just like that guy or that girl. They're mellow. They're on a different fucking playing field.
That's a great way to put it. He felt like he existed on a different plane than the rest of us in that he didn't seem to get bothered by a lot. He seemed to be very pure in his intentions, very sweet. Got very dusty in the theater a couple times. I will point out to you, there were some moments where it was hard to hold it together. Overall, this is a very good movie, worthy of the 99%. Hard to imagine why someone would have a problem with this. And if it were not for the Academy's tendency to not reward films, documentaries that do well in the theater, this might be up for best documentary. I could see it getting snubbed because it's getting a theatrical release and it's having some success. So
is RBG. I bet this and RBG are both up.
It'd be nice. It's a good movie. I think people should see it, especially if it expands. If it comes to a theater near you, I would recommend this.
I am very excited about this one.
It's a good movie.
I'm a little ashamed to say that I did not get a chance to see it because I can only see so many movies a week, Brian, especially when I'm assigned a movie. So I saw three this week, Hereditary, American Animals, and Chubby Rain. I was assigned a film.
Yeah, Bowfinger.
Chubby Rain, Bowfinger. Sweet. 1999, directed by Frank Oz.
I've seen a couple of people tweet you and say, dude, it's about time you saw Bowfinger.
Yeah,
good movie.
Yeah. I got a couple of emails from people saying, hey, you know what? Don't be pissed that Brian assigned this to you. It's actually one of my favorite guilty pleasures. I shouldn't like it, but I do. I got a couple of tweets.
Why would people say that? What is objectionable about the idea of Bowfinger?
What is objectionable?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, why would this be a guilty pleasure? Why?
I mean, look at the poster art. I mean Eddie Murphy doing like standard, an Urkel thing.
That's pretty funny.
I think it was because it was right at the time that Eddie Murphy was doing
that's
Nutty
right.
Professor movies. So it was kind of the and joke also, that he's just playing every character in every movie.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So,
Kit Jiff.
1999, Frank Oz. I already said that, right?
You didn't, but there you go.
I did. You just didn't hear it.
So you loved it.
I really hated this movie.
No, you did not.
Chalk.
There's no way you hated this movie.
Of stereotypes. We got the slutty starlet played by...
Yeah, there are archetypes. Every movie has archetypes.
Not every movie.
Every movie.
Played by, what's her name? Heather Graham over there. She's the sluttiest. It's hilarious because
she's sleeping
with the writer, and then she realizes, oh, look, the actor has actually more pull than the writer, so I'm going to sleep with him. Oh, look, the director has more power than the actor. I'm going to sleep with him.
That's good.
And then she ends up sleeping with everyone, including Jamie Kennedy, who is like, I don't even know what he is.
How could you not like that gag but love the stupid shit in Pecker?
We got the empty-headed male lead because Pecker knew what it was and was making fun of it. And this movie,
you don't think this movie knows what it is?
It's a goofy Steve Martin. You said that it was Steve Martin playing a straight man. That guy is fucking running all over the place doing his yes, he is. Stop. He absolutely
that
is. The paranoid, mentally ill Black Star, which I found somewhat offensive, actually. Thinking back to the time that it was made when
Kit Ramsey,
Lawrence Martin was actually Martin Lawrence was actually losing his fucking shit at that time, as happens with a lot of like black actors who aren't taken care of by the studios at all, and walking like through traffic. Remember Martin Lawrence?
Remember his jogging, trying to lose weight, and fainted.
I feel like they were almost poking fun at that because Eddie Murphy's character. So. The immigrant laborer is supposed to be hilarious.
I love that.
He went down to like Home Depot and picked up a couple Mexican laborers.
Ended up being like really into it. Of course,
you got the flaky Hollywood producer who's a part of he's heading this entire operation, which is to make a movie with an actor, with the top actor in the profession at the time, but he didn't get his permission to be in the movie.
That was a great twist.
Not a bad story.
That was a great story.
Kind of a fun little twist. I can almost see something like that happening, especially nowadays with technology. Yeah. However, this was done in such a goofy, over-the-top, quick fucking get Franks in the seat. It just didn't.
No. It's directed by a Frank. Frank Oz.
Frank Oz, yes. Brian. I'm gonna hold on real
this
quick.
This is a fun movie.
Hold on real quick. I just want to give you and the listeners... It's just a little, how the fuck do I find my stuff? Come on.
Come on, buddy.
I'm really bad with, there it is. Here's a little taste of what the score sounds like. And the score is all throughout this entire fucking movie.
I don't remember the score.
It's throughout the entire movie. Come on. Play.
I just kind of dig this.
Of course you do.
Kind of sounds like one of our featured artists this week.
This is a pop and jazz number. Ooh, play those keys. Tickle those ivories.
While Steve Martin's going, my FedEx truck might come one day.
This is great.
You got to figure out where he is. And Kirk Ramsey or what
Kit Ramsey.
Kit Ramsey. You got to figure out where he is. And then
Mindhead,
which is supposed to be Scientology. Like, all the building blocks were there, actually, for a fun little movie, but it did that goofy fucking SNL sketch thing that I hate. I couldn't buy in, dude. I didn't fucking smile once throughout the whole thing. Call me an asshole. I don't care. I just never once laughed.
Chubby Rain. Got you, suckers.
It's not funny, dude. It's just stupid. It's just fucking dumb. I just did not enjoy it. You know me, Brian. You know me.
I thought you. I don't mind this. Is this song cooks?
This is not. This is like.
Hey, so look at you! You're snapping your fingers.
Everything in this frame, everything in the frame, just looks like a Hollywood bullshit movie. You know what I mean?
I disagree.
Like the van that he's driving around. It's supposed to be like an old sad van, like that's like for vacuums or something. And I guess it's supposed to be Jamie Kennedy's van.
How'd you write Jamie?
Every frame just looks like.
Yeah, I forgot he was in.
It looks like a Hollywood bullshit movie, like something you see shooting on the back lot if you're like a tourist in town. There's nothing.
Is that not an intentional choice? Because the movie itself is about a schlocky movie production.
Now you're overthinking it because it's a dumb fucking movie. You're completely overthinking it. There's no art here.
I'm so sad you didn't like it.
I like bad movies every now and again. And
it's
I,
not a know, bad movie.
I didn't like the characters. All the characters, like the actress that was like, trying to take herself so seriously. It was supposed to be everything. Oh, thought right. It was funny, and it wasn't fucking funny. Like, it just was. I really wish I watched this with like a friend or my wife or something, so we could both look at each other and go like, is it me or is it you? Is it the movie?
And
the movie,
they kept going up to Kit Ramsey and like kept making him more crazy, thinking that like people were just coming up to him and saying random lines.
And then halfway through the movie,
let me hear some more of the song.
Sounds like a porn.
It's a funky groove.
Alright, halfway through the movie is when his...
Did you buy the soundtrack?
No, I have Apple Music. Halfway through the movie is when his brother shows up, who is also Eddie Murphy playing his brother. And I guess I like some of his reactions and like him doing that character.
Jeff is awesome.
It was like an Urkel
thing. What about the freeway scene?
The freeway scene was... It was just ridiculous. It was
absurd. Of course.
But
it's a lot of ridiculous.
It was Steve Martin going, okay, and cut. He's just so flamboyant. I don't get Steve Martin. And this is a Steve Martin movie, and I wish I did. This is like, once again, it's like one of those things like, oh, you don't like great pastrami sandwiches? Don't get mad at me for not enjoying pastrami sandwiches. Feel bad because I don't get to enjoy. I wish I enjoyed the flair of Steve Martin.
Do you like pastrami?
I love pastrami.
Okay, I do too.
Pastrami's
okay,
great.
I thought we're going to have to end the show right here.
Pastrami's fucking awesome.
Y'all want to go to Johnny's after this?
I think have to. But you know what? Steve Martin is no pastrami sandwich to me.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
I heard him on Stern getting interviewed a couple weeks ago. He's a lovely man. Reserved too in the interview. He's, you know, just normal. But every time, he's one of those guys that always has to be on when the camera's on him.
I would excuse.
Like, he could never do a dramatic role ever.
That's not true. The Spanish Prisoner. He was great. He's great. He does dramatic.
And Novocaine, too. He's pretty good in Novocaine. Yeah. All right. Later in his career. Yeah. Spanish Prisoner or Novocaine. Very, very good examples of him being mellow. And cool.
I always assumed that his character in this movie was doing these sort of, you know, very emphatic, cut, because he's trying to rally the troops around this low-budget production that has no money and has no end. Like, they're
no, he's just being Steve Martin is what he's doing. You're reading in all sorts of shit that's not there. This is like,
I think you're being dismissive.
Frank Oz got some of his friends together and they said, let's make a zany, funny movie. And we'll put Eddie Murphy, Steve Martin on the cover. And Steve Martin will have his arm around Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy will look a little odd. You won't even know it's Eddie Murphy at first, because he's squinting and he's wearing glasses. Nerdy Eddie Murphy. Mm-hmm. And people will come and they'll enjoy.
I don't think it did that well at the box office. I got to look it up. All right. Anyway, coming up next.
Did not enjoy that Bowfinger.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry to hear that.
No, I don't think you are.
I really am. I was hoping you'd enjoy it. I don't ever see
it. How do you not know me yet, Brian? Like, it's I can assign you a movie that you will hate and a movie that you would like.
It's a film about
filmmaking. I know how to do that. We've been doing this for like 10 years. I know how to assign a movie that you might enjoy.
This movie, yeah. You know, it did all right. It cost $55 million and it made $98.6 million.
So $55 million?
I'm sure a lot of that went to cast. There's a lot of names in this movie.
You had to pay Eddie Murphy twice, brother, right?
Well put. Next, we will have the top 5 bad movies with good stories. Anderson, somebody got something on our Amazon click-through banner, andersonandbrian.com. Made me think of you. If you're still doing, if you had pursued oceanography, ocean science, marine biology, yes, perhaps you would have gotten yourself a Sea Life Sea Dragon Mini Spot Flood underwater light. This is a little like pen light that when you're filming, it like attaches to a GoPro or something. It's like a little underwater floodlight, and the review on it is quite good.
Yeah.
Do you ever do
leaps
any underwater
and bounds?
Do you ever do any underwater shooting?
Never shooting. I did a lot of underwater like diving and
we never never camera
Cousteau Society, but never had a camera. In my
feels
hand.
Like it would combine.
I don't
two,
think they really had that back. This is like 1992, 93.
No, they didn't really have Abyss, a lot of barely come out.
The underwater camera housing and whatnot was like a big deal. And I wasn't on the Calypso or the Halcyon. Was that the other
one? I don't know what that is.
Those are the ships that they used. The Calypso was the main one.
Gotcha. And, other things purchased
Sun had one
on the Amazon banner on AndersonandBryan.com include a Lightspeed Tango wireless aviation headset was purchased, as well as an Axis 5 megapixel network camera. GoPro Hero 6. Oh, maybe they're connecting their underwater light to the GoPro Hero 6 in black. Someone listened to us and got a TCL 55-inch 4K Ultra HD Roku. Don't forget Roku. Smart LED TV. Like you said, don't forget the Roku part of it. Ooh, just added the Filmstruck app to the Roku TV.
So yeah, they have Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
They do, which I'll be watching shortly.
Son of a bitch.
Shortly. Also, someone, perhaps the same person, got a Kanto mobile TV stand with mount, possibly for a TCL 55-inch TV. Two Nix Play widescreen Wi-Fi cloud digital photo frames were purchased, as well as Linux. Three Linux Varibit drill bits picked up. Someone got
drill bit
Taylor.
That's from the Aviator. Drill bits. My favorite
drill
line in the home.
Drill bits.
Yeah, he's getting talked down to, and he just says it to the guy, because the guy says, oil parts, drill bits.
Netgear Nighthawk tri-band Wi-Fi router, Fire HD 10 tablet with Alexa, Soleus Air portable dehumidifier, Ashley Furniture signature design Galveston end table, Ubiquity Nano Station was purchased, as well as a Brother high-speed professional label printer and a Brother mobile color page scanner. Echo, second generation smart speaker with Alexa, limited edition oak finish. That's a nice little item. Cherry blossom tree wall decal. What do we do with a wall decal in the shape of a cherry blossom?
You put it on your child's wall, and it looks very pretty.
It's like
nice
a tree, I guess. Okay, yeah. There you go. Evolution 3 terabyte external PS4 gaming hard drive. Alphamoto vacuum carburetor synchronizer gauge. Pearl Men's Select Pursuit tri-suit. Sorbus 3-tier flower plant stand, brushed nickel pull-out kitchen faucet.
Pull-out.
It's the kind with the extendo neck.
No kids.
Singer Fashion Mate sewing machine was also purchased, as well as the aforementioned Sea Life Sea Dragon mini spot flood underwater light was purchased.
You doubled up on that one.
I did. I had to fill some time.
Here are the movies that were clicked through since the last time we spoke. The Incredibles was clicked through. Somebody's getting set for The Incredibles 2.
Yeah, soon.
I should rewatch that, too. I don't have any time, but I should give it a shot. Maybe with the boy. Hey, The Wolf of Wall Street was clicked through, as well as the Adjustment Bureau.
I guess.
Random. I never saw The Adjustment Bureau.
Who's hankering to see that?
The old Matt Damon movie where he's...
Was there an original Adjustment Bureau?
I don't know. Stargate was clicked through, as well as Bronson. Fucked the S. It was streaming for free for the longest time, but apparently not anymore. Death Wish, Justice League, Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, 10 Things I Hate About You, Four Lions. Hey, look at that. We just talked about it. Captain America Civil War, as well as Annihilation.
Annihilation. What do you think the Rotten Tomatoes score is of the Adjustment Bureau?
Annihilation. What's that?
What do you think the Rotten Tomatoes score is?
67.
Very close, 71.
I cheat.
You're on there right now.
I'm looking up.
Thanks for the click-through, guys. All the purchases you guys make, all the clicks and purchases, we appreciate it. And back to the show. Hey there, kids. It's Tom Likas, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. Yeah, welcome back. Time for some bad movies with good stories, good concepts, good ideas, whatever you want to call it. And so I'm looking at my list and I realize I remember very little about these movies specifically, other than disliking them.
Right. That's the problem with these lists. That's why I don't like to do these lists. But
it's good. We can talk about the story, thinking maybe this might be good. And lo and behold.
The only good thing here is maybe someone's listening going, oh, I thought the exact same thing. Mm. Look at that. Hey, do you have a date as to when we did Need to Be Remade top 5?
I looked it up. I can look it up again.
Because I got my list here. So Number five for me was Caveman, which I stand behind. Ringo Starr vehicle with Lyle Zato. Is it Lyle Zato?
Sounds familiar.
Yes. Shelley. I'm not going to get into the specifics of these movies because it's been a while, but that was 1986. Grew up with that movie. I enjoyed that movie, even though it's a horrible, horrible movie. Caveman. Newsies. Can't remember what my reasoning behind that was. The Defiant Ones, the 1958 movie, of course. I really would like to see that be remade, as well as White Dog, which almost White made Dog. My list today. White Dog, it's a good concept. It's about a woman who comes brings in a stray dog who just happens to be a racist dog that was trained by
that's right
Nazi skinheads.
White Dog.
And then my last movie that need to be remade was AI, 2001.
5-1. This is an interesting mix here.
AI needs to be remade by someone new.
No, it's perfect as it is, actually.
The same. I just looked at that part of the fucking studio that my mind goes blanking.
We did this all the way back in 2011, turns out. This might have been the episode that Bill heard in Bill's Movie Emporium.
Why?
Because it was 2011 when he posted his review.
Oh, there's a 1 in 52 chance, Brian, so it's probably not.
Number five for me was Howard the Duck. Stand by that. Number four for me was a very shitty film called Two for the Money, a gambling movie that I would have liked to see more of, but it was bad. Number three, Meet Joe Black. Stand by that one.
I like that one.
Number two, dig this, Cujo. Because you can do more than special effects.
My number two was White Dog. I wonder if we freaked out.
Cujo.
I wonder if we freaked out.
Number one, I don't know. It's a little bit dated, but it's also kind of, it's silly, actually. Pride of the Yankees.
Yeah, that's silly.
No, the movie is silly. The movie is very, very old-timey.
All right, here we go.
1942.
I like my number one very much, so I'm going to ask that you go first. So that
good.
I can...
I'll start off. I have a tie at number five. First of all, this is a no docs, no documentaries on this one.
Speak for yourself.
Also, this was suggested by Lisa Piedmonte Bristol Brogan on Facebook. That's a mouthful.
What's her name?
Lisa.
What's her name?
Well, I assume, a lot of people put their maiden names,
yeah, especially on the Facebook because they want to continue to be recognized by people they went to school with, which I understand.
I'm assuming her name is Lisa Bristol Brogan. Lisa Piedmonte Bristol Brogan.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa, for this.
We said her name quite a bit.
Lisa. Yeah,
she said it to us on Facebook, and we appreciate the good top fives coming through on Facebook. So if you want to send it to us.
What's your number five?
Number five for me is a tie. Two Kevin Spacey movies based on real people. Number five, Casino Jack. Do you ever see Casino Jack? About Jack Abramoff, the Washington, D.C. lobbyist. Mm-hmm. Very interesting story. Jack Abramoff was a weird character. He, literally a character in real life. He was a weird dude. He constantly quoted movies, in the voices of the movies. But he was this Washington lobbyist, this very powerful Washington lobbyist who actually got, a lot of Indian casinos up and running. But he also stole a lot of money from them, hence why they made a movie about him. He was very crooked. And it was directed by George Hickenlooper, his final film before he passed away.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it made for HBO or something?
No, it felt like it.
It felt like
39% of Rotten Tomatoes. I saw this in the theater, I believe.
Hickenlooper, of course, is famous for Hearts of Darkness. He's also the creator of Sling Blade. He wrote and directed the short Sling Blade, and then it was kind of stolen from him by Billy Bob Thornton.
More importantly, Mayor of the Sunset Strip.
One of my favorite Mayor of the Sunset Strip.
Yes, Rodney Bingenheimer. The story of Jack Abramoff starring Kevin Spacey was not good. Not good at all.
What's your other one?
Tied with a movie I was personally disappointed by because I was very much looking forward to. Passion Project, directed by Kevin Spacey and starring Kevin Spacey.
Jesus.
Beyond the Sea, 2004.
Okay. All right.
Bobby Darin story. He sang the songs. He loved Bobby Darin. He got special permission from the family. And it was bad. 43% Rotten Tomatoes.
You're a big Kevin Spacey guy, apparently, huh?
I am, because I put two movies on here that I didn't like.
I mean, you saw two Kevin Spacey movies that I wouldn't touch.
Oh, you wouldn't touch Casino Jack?
No.
Huh? It's an interesting true story, as is Beyond the Sea. There's so many interesting things about Bobby Darin, but this movie was weirdly fantastical. There was a child version of Bobby Darin that kept popping up throughout the movie, mm-hmm. and
probably
talking to him.
Probably shared scenes with
him. Yeah, no, talk to him, had dialogue with mm-hmm. him. they would talk about what was going on in his life. Like it was, and of course the child was the wise one. It was very strange, very poorly conceived. I would still like to see a good movie about Bobby Darin, but I don't know if it's going to happen. Beyond the Sea.
Who's Bobby Darin?
Mac the Knife, Beyond the Sea.
Okay.
Somewhere away.
He's a singer.
Artificial Flowers.
A giant blind spot with music brand.
Bobby Darin was fascinating because he started off as a teen idol. He did Splish Splash, I Was Taking a Bath. Blah, 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 blah. And he became a lounge, like a big Sinatra style. He did Mac the Knife and all that stuff. He arranged his own music. He was really ahead of his time.
Heard enough?
He was ahead of his time.
Number five for me.
The movie did not do him justice.
This is going to sound very familiar because I just spent time talking about it, but Bowfinger is on my list.
No, it's not. For me.
It absolutely is. I had a hard time.
You asshole.
Swear to God. It's on my list right there. Number five. Look at that.
Fucking jerk.
1999, Frank Oz directed
Bowfinger.
Not a terrible idea. A producer down on his luck. He's on his last thread. He's got his little bungalow in Hollywood. Producer directed. This guy was a producer for sure. He was putting everything together.
He was a hustler.
Hustler, yes. And he's down with his last dime. Just praying and waiting for that FedEx. I wonder if they got paid by FedEx. I bet they did. Waiting for that one day a FedEx envelope's going to be on my desk. Not a terrible idea, and I could see. Actually, I wrote a treatment for something similar in fashion.
Oh, it all makes sense. You're jealous.
No, not at all. I like the idea of people manipulating Hollywood for their own good at whatever stake, but like it being real. I don't like Hollywood bullshit cartoony movies unless they're really inventive and funny. I just don't. And this was that. Bowfinger was that. I did not like the style it was directed in. I never liked the much like Mars Attacks. I don't like it when I don't like that. Where there's like a bunch of crazy characters that would never ever be together, but they're all running from the aliens. Like they got the showgirl, they got the boxer. That's what this felt like. Like they had the immigrant workers.
I love.
They had the car. The you love that. You love.
I love the immigrant workers. I love that they end up becoming like very self-serious filmmakers.
It's just and they. Actually, there was, if I appreciated anything, is how they kind of evolved like, throughout the story. Like they became kind of like fancy boys at one point.
They became full on.
They were
films
on their cell phones. Yeah. I kind of enjoyed that. But Bowfinger, I could see this being made into a semi-dramatic, comedic. I know James Franco's out of style now.
He's persona non grata.
Yeah, perhaps he'll make it back in. I don't know, but I could see him doing it. Maybe because of the Disaster Artist, but I could see like some kind of semi serious film where somebody who's trying to.
I will meet you halfway and say this is a more cartoony version of like State and Main. Like State and Main is a more serious.
It's Mammoth doing Mammoth.
Well, of course, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ooh, also there was something there with the Spanish Prisoner connection.
With Mammoth. That's right. Yeah, we talked about Steve Martin earlier. Yes. Doing drama well, and I was completely crushed, and I totally. right then and there. Boom.
Your shot was rejected.
And then I also followed up with Novocaine, my own self, kicking my own ass with that. But yeah, Bowfinger, not a terrible idea. Just, I hate the execution.
Oh.
I hate it. Brian, you have to hate it, too. You have to look
no,
at it.
No, not a bit.
Really?
Enjoyable.
Like if they made it today, you know who would be Steve Martin? Guess. There's one answer.
There is?
Yeah.
Who?
Melissa McCarthy.
I didn't see that coming.
Absolutely.
No, she'd be the...
She's the queen of Frank movies.
She'd be the Kit Ramsey character. She'd be the actress.
Well, actually, it would have to be a female director.
All right.
It'd have to be.
But it'd be a female actress, too. Although
she would have to be female everything.
Yeah.
Nothing but vaginas here.
But then the starlet character wouldn't make a lot of sense. All right, anyway.
She's a lesbionic.
That's true. Ooh, well put. Yeah, of course.
Oh, you know what Bowfinger was doing? It was like they were supposed to be overacting bad, but it was like overacting bad. It was Heather. I didn't know Heather Graham had it in her to do such horrible acting.
Stop it.
It was almost impressive, but it was too, like her running through the alley and like, you know, doing that. It's just, it was cringe.
But she was a bad
actress.
The
entire fucking movie. Yeah, I know. But she's acting as a bad actress. So it's acting, but she was acting too good to the point that it wasn't believable at all because she was too bad.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
I
the movie kind of hurt my fucking brain and I was very upset that it continued to play in front of me.
That it didn't just stop.
In fact, I was actually kind of excited. You know that feeling when you come home in high school and you're like, I got a bunch of homework.
Yeah.
but I forgot my books in my locker. Remember that feeling?
Yeah.
It's kind of like a relief. Like, I'm going to be fucked tomorrow, but at least I don't have to do it tonight. I kind of felt that a few times because I had a 24-hour rental and I started it and then I couldn't continue. So I continued the following day. I thought it was a 48-hour rental and it's like, you have 35 minutes to finish this. I'm like, I might not be able to finish it.
You were racing against the clock. Top 5 races against the clock.
I was, yeah. But I watched it all the way to the end.
Well done.
Mm-hmm.
You're here.
FedEx truck.
FedEx truck. Mm-hmm. The end. Mm-hmm. Number 4 for me. A movie that... I'm sure I have not mentioned since I flickfested back in 2013 or 14. A bad movie, very bad movie, 26% of Rotten Tomatoes, but a great idea. This is a great trailer and a great concept and just poorly executed. Do you remember the movie Anderson Upside Down? Do you remember anything about it?
I never saw it, but yes, I remember the trailer being very intriguing.
Trailer was very intriguing. And the movie was quite a letdown.
I remember your middling review, too.
Quite a letdown. Written and directed by Juan Diego Solanas. Starring Jim Sturgess. I must have really hated him in the movie because here's what I have written down, and I probably said at the time. Starring the charisma-free Jim Sturgess, we give way too much credit to actors with a ton of natural charisma, when really we should be celebrating the Jim Sturgesses of the world who somehow became stars without having any discernible charisma. We should give out an award for best charisma-free actor each year. Aubrey Plaza can host. I don't think I liked him in this.
Look at you. You can't keep it together reading your own fucking shit.
That was clever. I don't know what I don't know. I didn't know I had it in me. That was pretty good. So Jim Sturgess is in this. And this is a movie about, so it's a fantasy film, science fiction film about two worlds.
You were so pleased with yourself.
It was pretty funny.
Was it?
Aubrey
Plaza, she's okay.
She's
not charisma free. I wouldn't say that.
Anderson.
Those eyes bring something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a black hole of charisma.
Okay.
This is
upside
down. There's about two worlds that exist less than a quarter mile from each other, and they're literally upside down from one another, and they have their own gravitational pull, so there are two worlds that exist, but the worlds like butt up against each other, and Jim Sturgess and Kirsten Dunst have this sort of Romeo and Juliet thing going on where you're not supposed to, you know, the people down below, they're lower class. Down below, they're lower class. People above, they stay to their own. I mean, we don't
mix. Elysium.
Yeah, we don't mix, and it's them.
World.
And Absolutely. And they have a forbidden love. They fell in love.
But who's lower class? He is, right?
Yeah, he's
always going to be the guy.
He's from down below.
Why can't she be lower
class? He's from down below.
When are the girls ever going to be lower class?
I don't know.
Let's stick up for the guy.
She's the uptown girl. He's the downtown guy. And he gets like these, someone makes him like these boots that so he can, like gravity boots, so he can walk around up there.
Sounds like it's getting corny.
And it gets pretty bad pretty fast. Like, it's not good, but it's such a great idea. I wish they would have made a good movie version of this. And I was hoping for good things out of this.
As opposed to what is this?
What came out of it? Yeah.
A good movie version.
I watched it with Christy, and she actually said at one point, why is this exciting? Like, something was dramatic was happening. And I think I replied with, I don't know what's happening anymore. Mm-hmm. No, there was actual conversation.
Number 4 for me. Yeah. This one's a little left field and very personal because I don't think anyone even saw Dark Star, H.R. Giger's World, 2014.
Oh, this is a documentary?
It's a documentary.
Oh, you bastard.
And it needs to be made into a better documentary.
We could have done a whole documentary.
Well, we're not going to because I don't like this topic because I don't like, you know, shitting on movies. And this is a small little movie. However, at the time when I flickfested, I was very excited to see Dark Star, H.R. Giger's World. H.R. Giger is this the Swiss artist who is responsible for the Xenomorph and all sorts of creepy imagery that we've become accustomed to from the 80s. Mainly from the aforementioned Alien and Aliens and all of the horrific imagery that you see on billboards, which I get so excited, like when Alien Covenant came out last year, and it's just at least here in LA, giant billboards with nothing but it's just splashed with H.R. Giger imagery. And
definitely a footnote to movie history. Like, he's not really known by a lot of people.
And he is a fascinating character. And to hear his story, which you learn in this documentary,
a lot of general population,
that he had such horrible nightmares as a child, and he was so scared of so many things. The only way that he could take any kind of semblance of control was to actually draw them out on paper. And he felt like he was in control of these awful, rotting, dead babies and whatnot. fascinating. However, it's one of these documentaries that Brian constantly refers to as far as in love with its own access, which absolutely was the case here. It was just an old man kind of shuffling around his own house for probably 50, 60% of the documentary. And he deserves a better story because there's a lot. I picked up on a lot of story in watching this documentary about how he's a lot of his work is influenced by a lover that he had that died prematurely early on in his career, a model that he was dating. The story that I told about his nightmares as a child. There's a lot going on here with this very, very complicated artist. And the documentary Dark Star just does not do the trick. And whether it's a full narrative or a better documentary, I said it at the time when I flickfested, this is a story I want to see better. H.R. Giger, I want to see him more rounded out and fleshed out. And I know what will happen. I mean, if we continue as a society long enough, I mean, this man deserves.
It'll get there.
A better. I actually got to visit his bar and his.
Oh, there you go. Dropping a name again.
His actual final art gallery, I guess, as well as his unmarked grave. His
final resting place.
Gruyere, Switzerland. It's not like I took a pilgrimage. Not like I'm obsessed with this man. However,
you just went to Switzerland to see.
Well, I mean, I heard that this futuristic artist had a bar that was created like out of like something you'd see in the movie Alien, as well as his gallery in the middle of a medieval town that is frozen in time. Wow. I'm like, I gotta see that, honey. We're going to Switzerland to see that
tomorrow.
Gruyere, it's where the cheese comes from, and that's where H.R. Giger lays his head. That's my number four.
Number three for
Dark Star. Dark Star. HR.
Good. I'm glad I will not see that. Number three for me. Shockingly high on Rotten Tomatoes at 55%. This is not a good movie. In fact, time has not been kind to it because I saw it a few years after it came out and I was bored, even though I was a teenager and probably should have been into this movie. Not Deadpool. The Deadpool. The Deadpool. Remember this one?
Clint Eastwood. I saw this in the theaters with my father.
As Dirty Harry.
And his daughter's in this, and she is very attractive. I was like 10 when it came out, and she's 12 in it. Yeah.
So you're into it?
I believe. No, that's Tightrope. I'm thinking of Tightrope. Okay. Never mind.
This is 1988.
Yeah, this
film.
Is the movie that was sold with Guns N' Roses.
Yes. Welcome to the Jungle. Heavily. Yeah. Oh, the trailer is quite a time capsule. Directed by Buddy Van Horn, director of Pink Cadillac and Any Which Way You Can. He's a former stuntman. You have to imagine he was friends with Clint Eastwood.
Any Which Way But Loose is pretty good.
This is their sequel, Which Way You Can.
I know.
The Deadpool is, people might know, well, of course, Deadpool now, the comic book hero, but the idea of a Deadpool was, and that was the idea behind the movie, there that you would enter into a contest with other people and gamble on who would die next, you know, celebrities or whatever. Death pool, exactly. Yeah. That's where the idea came from. And this one, there were like, it was a high stakes pool that Dirty Harry uncovered of celebrities that kept kicking off and they were dying very untimely.
Somebody wanted to cash in their bets.
Someone was trying to cash in. It was a cable, like rich people who were gambling on this. And it's an absurd movie. Very bad, very boring, and very stupid, starring Clint Eastwood as Dirty Harry. And I also figured at a certain point, this was also, I theorize, this was a movie that existed before it was a Dirty Harry movie. Like, this script was out there,
yeah, and
the Dirty
like,
Harry
hey,
stuff slapped on it.
We'll franchise.
Because I remember thinking, like, this is not the Dirty Harry I know. This is not, you know, hey, punk, you know, all that stuff, right. Feel lucky, all that.
Well, it's a more reserved, cerebral.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's like a detective rather than just like the ass-kicking street cop.
The whole movie is more reserved and cerebral, really. It's a real thing.
I don't even know if I saw this.
It's really bad. Deadpool, The Deadpool, 1988. It's not a good movie, and it's a good idea. The idea of a death pool could be made into a good movie today. I could totally see that being pulled off. It'd be a fun way to incorporate like celebrity cameos.
Yeah, and they could have fun with it too. It could almost be, you know, a comedy.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Not like a Bowfinger type comedy, but like, you know, something.
This was a shoot 'em up action movie, and it just
with real celebrities. You know what? Good call, Brad.
Not good.
Good call.
You know who plays the singer, the Axl Rose character? Because Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle is used in the film. You know who sings? You know who's the singer, the character who is on the Deadpool?
The actor?
Yeah.
Who is the actor?
Who is the actor?
No idea.
Jim Carrey.
I was going to say Jim Carrey.
A young Jim Carrey.
Holy shit, I was going to say that. I think I must have known that somewhere in my brain because I was about to say Jim Carrey. That's weird. Number three for me. The Chase. Oh, look at this. This is where you get like the, you dig hard, you dig deep, and you're like, what the fuck?
For movies like The Deadpool.
Do you remember The Chase?
No.
1994, Brian.
Was directed by Baldwin or
Adam Rifkin. Adam Rifkin, of course,
Charlie
directed. Charlie Sheen. Adam Rifkin directed Detroit Rock City, as well as Giuseppe Makes a Movie, which is that documentary that I felt was very exploitative that I watched and kind of enjoyed
Chase,
a couple years ago.
What's this fuck?
The Chase. Charlie Sheen stars in The Chase. What's the problem?
The Chase. Rifkin was just on the Corolla show. Like, he was just on there.
Easy.
Sorry, I'm dropping a lot of names.
Bill will not appreciate that.
Rifkin.
Right? This stars Charlie Sheen, Christy Swanson, Henry Rollins, as well as Flea and Anthony Kiedis. Yes, they're in this. So here's the beauty of The Chase, Brian. 1994 is The Chase. I can't even remember the circumstances, but I think it was a high school run.
He directed the last movie star with Burt Reynolds.
Thank you for that.
Keep going.
Who did that?
Adam Rifkin.
Most recently, that's what he's promoting.
This is his most recent film. It came out last year.
Burt Reynolds, last movie star.
Last movie star.
Anything like The Last Action Hero?
Carry On.
The sequel to The Last Action Hero. So yeah, The Chase. What was groundbreaking at the time? It's not a well-made movie. It's goofy. It's over the top. Flea and Anthony Kiedis are like, they're vigilante. So Charlie Sheen, he's on the run. He's on a lam. Some kind of heist gone wrong or something. And he takes Christy Swanson captive. Right, she's his hostage. And he hops in the car. And now they're on the fucking 405, the 101. They're on the freeways out here. The entire movie is the chase scene, which was kind of groundbreaking. And I remember respecting and actually enjoying. Like, who had the fucking nerve to make a movie that the entire movie is the chase scene? But of course, as you'd imagine, a bunch of stuff happens as the chase is occurring. One of which is probably most notable, is Anthony Kiedis and Flea. They're like vigilantes, and they're trying to catch him, almost like Dog the Bounty Hunter, but years before Dog the Bounty Hunter, because they wanted to get some money. And it's just a goofy romp, but if you were to make a movie, not unlike Locke, where it is, the entire movie is a chase scene. Kind of like you take Drive.
Yeah, you're in.
You take the beginning of that horrible baby movie that everyone loved last year.
Baby Driver.
Baby Driver. And Chase, and you mix it all. You make it into an actual good movie where the entire movie is a chase scene.
Interesting.
Not bad.
Okay.
Not bad. So The Chase, 1994. It's actually a fun little... Have you ever seen this movie?
No.
Trivia.
No, I have not seen it. Sorry, ask me if I've seen it.
It's been forgotten. For good reason.
For good reason.
It's not terrible. It's just not great. But I love the concept. The entire movie is a chase scene. I won't say what happens with
yeah, this can be done in an interesting way, especially in the light of, like you said, Locke and movies like that.
Just where we are with like technology and what you can do with cameras and storytelling nowadays, you can do all sorts of really interesting things that push the boundaries.
My only caveat, Charlie Sheen has to star in it. She is distressed.
Charlie Sheen has to?
That's right. He has to reprise his role.
As?
If they're doing it, he's in the chase.
Why are you saying she's distressed?
Because he has to play like a Locke type character.
A Tom Hardy type character?
Right. My number two.
The closest thing I could see to Chase is actually Locke. And I love Locke. You know that? Oh, Steven Knight's got a new one coming out. We'll talk more about that later.
Number two. For me, the only film history will not look back kindly on this, that is fresh on my Rotten Tomatoes at barely 60%. This is a bad movie. Trust me, I don't recommend anyone see this. And I can understand how you would want to, because hey, Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, a really interesting true story, The Terminal.
The Terminal,
2004. Not a good movie. Stanley Tucci, great. Catherine Zeta-Jones, sure. Throw
so it's a great
in there.
Story.
It's a great story.
Why?
It's a true story of what's the guy's name?
Limited storytelling. Stuck in a terminal, right?
Yeah, I believe
it. Russian. What's his nationality?
I forget that.
I know it's unrecognizable.
Mehran Kamiri Nasiri. Mm-hmm. He stayed in the Charles de Gaulle International Airport, Terminal 1, Paris, France, from 1988 to 2006. What happened was when
long he was in the airport?
He took a plane from, I didn't write down what country it was, but he took a plane from his home country in, I believe, Eastern Europe. And by the time he landed, the country had been either annexed or absolved or taken over, or something happened where his country didn't exist anymore. And
was it Liechtenstein?
It was one of the, it wasn't Liechtenstein. It was a country I had not heard of, but it was 1988. And so when he landed, his passport was no longer valid because he wasn't from a country that existed.
Right.
And so they're like, sorry, you can't.
Got caught up in the red tape.
Yeah. If you leave this airport, you're going to be arrested for, right. you know, for, and deported to God knows where. And so he stayed in the airport for nigh on 20 years, 18 years.
Did he really?
Yeah. That's in 1988, 2006. It's
Did
an
you
amazing,
say nigh on just
nigh
now?
On.
Yeah. Why'd you do that?
Because that's how you use that phrase. 18 years in Terminal 1 in Paris, France, Charles de Gaulle Airport. That's amazing. That's a
that's
great
a
story.
Shit airport, that's too.
I never been there.
So where did he sleep? I've heard of refugees dealing with this kind of thing for 20 years.
In the movie, he kind of like sets up camp like in like the loading dock area, and like
he do for food.
He befriends a lot of the workers there. A lot of
just go to
workers.
Jail, dude. Just leave and hope for the best.
Yeah, the movie is just boring.
But is it real though? Like that actually happened?
The guy's
lived
name
in an airport
was,
for 20 years.
Was Mehran Karimi Nassiri?
Did he die in the airport?
I don't know what happened.
Is he buried in the airport?
Oh my god.
Did they bury him in the blue ice and
I don't
just
know
dropped
what
him over like some
what,
ocean?
I don't know what happened to him.
Sounds like Idiocracy at work.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't
like,
sound real.
Well, humans create these rules that they can't then go against
loophole,
because,
yeah,
it's just like a lot of dumb that humans following rules to the T.
That was another thing. It felt I can't imagine.
Somebody had to have stepped in and be like, dude, stop living here.
I can't imagine he faced. So Stanley Tucci.
I thought it was like a weekend. He was
Stanley Tucci
in.
Is the. The de facto
bureaucratic
enemy. He's the nemesis because he's trying to get him out. He's like, you can just leave. And of course, there's Asians waiting for him. So he's like, no, I'm not leaving.
They're all this manpower is invested
like,
in him.
He's like shaking his head. He's like, I can't get this guy out of my airport. Right. He's like, dude, why the fuck do you care? Like, you have a giant airport. The guy's not causing any problems. Like, you have people in here all the time. What do you care? Anyway, I can't imagine in real life you face that kind of adversity. It feels very, very, very Hollywood-y.
Like
well,
Sully.
If we're going to have this movie, we got to have an enemy.
They created all sorts of like
the board,
drama.
The board.
Yeah. The board was all like accusatory, like you're the villain here, Sully. We're going to put the screws to you. I don't think that happened. Number two for me. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on 2007's Transformers, but I mean,
come on.
You should be happy about this. This shows you that I actually like the story. I like the idea of prehistoric robots being unearthed and having some kind of war on Earth with just a boy in his car. But the execution was so god awful. And you have to admit it. 2007's Transformers, it was the beginning of the end of big action. What could be amazing film, really. I mean, you think about the scope of the robot. I don't have to talk to you. The scope of the robots, just with their impending doom and smashing and crashing and living amongst us and battling amongst us. But instead, what we get is what's his name? What's the guy with the red and blue?
Optimus.
Optimus. We get an Optimus like hiding behind a fountain and playing hide and seek with fucking the boy's parents. It's just absurd.
Can I just say that I'm personally hurt?
Yeah. Well, you should be hurt by that movie by Michael Bay. It hurt you years ago.
You see the trailer for Bumblebee though?
Looks pretty sweet.
Fuck to the no. Sweet. No.
Kubo and the Two String Director.
Yeah.
What demo? Kubo?
Kubo Director.
Oh, so it's going to be a cartoon?
It's a prequel.
I'm in.
No, it's a prequel.
Oh, well, it's not a cartoon. It's a prequel and it's live action. I'm out.
It's pretty sweet.
Mm. Action scenes look like they fixed what Michael Bay had wrong,
How
though.
How dare you?
Like, you can actually see the robots doing things.
Oh, really? Well, that's kind of cool. But I have no idea what the director of Kubo could do, because I mean, he did stop motion animation, which was very impressive.
Yeah, but look what he accomplished with such bare bones tools. Imagine what he can do with a computer.
I think he used a computer. Yeah. Kubo.
You didn't need to.
I think sometimes too much is too much, you know? But we'll see.
Express Weight. Okay. Number one for me. Am I number one already?
Bumblebee.
Number one for me, Bumblebee. Number one for me. I had such high hopes for this movie. It was such a great story, a true story. Such a great story, such a bad movie. I was so crushed by 2008's 21. You ever see 21? The movie about
another
the card
Kevin
counting
movie.
It's another Kevin Spacey movie.
Dude, Kevin Spacey just dominating the list.
Yeah, I know. He's a supporting character in this one. This is a movie.
Do you think
the
he was
MIT.
So distracted with the little boy tush that he ruined all these movies?
He couldn't get it.
Maybe
get it
like these were good movies, but the little boy tush
it's totally possible
distracted him
little
to the point
tush.
of
Is he accused of little boy tush?
That's what he's accused of. Yeah, he touches little boy tush.
Well, allegedly. I don't know about that. 21.
They actually gave him an ultimatum. They said, you can come back to Hollywood and start working, but your screen name has to be Kevin Spacey, Kevin Little Boy Tush Spacey.
He's still debating whether or not he wants to.
He's actually in his quarters waiting and thinking about it.
21 is a story, an incredible story, based on the book Bringing Down the House. It is the famous MIT card counting team, the blackjack card counting team that took Vegas for millions of dollars in, I believe it was the 1990s. I saw a cheap one-hour TV special, Anderson, that was more compelling.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I wonder how you don't see the marketing for this and the trailers for this and still get taken.
Oh no! You're missing the point. I knew about the story, the true story. Mm. I heard they're making it a movie. I was like, sweet, this would be great. I saw the trailer. I was like, oh boy, I don't know where this is going. And I felt compelled to see it because I wanted.
Because you had seen the hour long.
Well, no, I was familiar with the story. It made news. I was like, this is really interesting, and just was terrible.
Okay.
Yeah, not a good movie, which is really bad. Also, it had a big whitewashing controversy because a lot of the players, some of the main players in this team were. Do the math, no pun intended, Asian. They were MIT students. They were great at math.
Well, thank God they cleaned that up.
Yeah, and of course they... Okay.
You're going to have eight actual Asian actors?
Yeah, they
Logan, do you hear this?
They totally recast it with like very, very Hollywood-y.
Just like Ben Affleck did with Argo Fuck Yourself.
Yeah.
Oh.
He was a Hispanic fellow.
However, that he was praised for that.
Yeah, he at least had kept the name the same. So anyway, lots to not like about this movie. It's not good. I don't recommend it. But if you want to learn more about it, read up on it. It's fascinating how they did it. They do get into it, but it's the movie.
Watch the hour long 2020 whatever exactly. Brian saw.
You can watch a 30 minute thing probably on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It is fascinating. I will say that it's a really interesting story.
Do you think it could be made into like
absolutely
90 minutes to 2 hour
absolutely
riveting?
It's very dramatic. Mm-hmm. I totally think, and it's got the great Robin Hood thing.
Who directed it?
Robert Luketic. Luketic. He directed Legally Blonde and a bunch of bad movies.
Legally Blonde's not bad.
Legally Blonde's a good movie. Credit where it's due. Yeah. I like that movie.
I like that Legally Blonde. Number one for me. I feel like you're going to be upset with yourself when you realize it's not on your list. And
really?
It should be.
This is one more personal.
This one's directed by John Frankenheimer. Okay. Uncredited Richard Stanley. 1996. Based on an H.G. Wells novel.
Okay.
The Island of Dr. Moreau. Now, the concept of the Island of Dr. Moreau is so creepy.
I don't think I've seen this movie. I've seen the documentary, but I haven't seen this movie.
Oh, I saw the movie.
I haven't seen this.
A very attractive girl who I was trying to date at the time. We had one date. She told me I should see this movie. She's like, I love this
movie.
She
wanted you out.
No, she liked it. And
she genuinely liked it.
She knew I liked movies, and she's like, I want you to watch this before we see each other again. And I was halfway through the movie. I'm like, I like this. The way this girl looks so much, but I can't see her again. It really happened.
That's a commitment to the film, man.
45 minutes into the movie, I'm like, I can't see Cameron again. That was her name.
Poor Cameron.
Island of Dr. Moreau is a great story.
Yeah, it was a book, wasn't it?
Horrifying. Yeah, H.G. Wells.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Novel. It's about this crazy outlying.
Great documentary, though.
Great documentary. What's it called? I can't remember. They're about the making Something of the Island of Dr. Moreau. This is also a remake. I mean, it was already made before. I'm never going to see the original because that's not much more highly rated. But the idea of like an outlying scientist, a genetic manipulator, and with this little imp of an assistant,
that's right.
Creating these humanoid creatures on this island all to themselves in a shipwreck, and a guy washes up on shore and discovers these things slowly but surely, there's something there to be glorious and fantastic and horrifying and creepy. And instead, we get a fat, sweaty man wearing a toga and Val Kilmer being fucking Kilmer. Oh, you know what happened the other day?
What happened?
Oh, man, Bill's not going to like this.
Oh, no.
Fuck. 2 weeks from now, we do a show where we answer the questions.
Listener questions.
Listener questions. And one of the questions was celebrity...
Interactions.
Yes. I have one that happened a week and a half ago, and I've been meaning to tell both of you guys about it. It was pretty goddamn great. Not a celebrity though. I was in my buddy's garage, works in the business, works in camera department, high up in camera department.
does a lot of crazy shit. I was actually holding a drive that I had to help him move to the other side of the garage that was about 30 hours of the new Top Gun.
Oh, boy.
On this drive, including the Val Kilmer scenes. And they were all on the drive. I'm like, we can just go up and upload it to the computer and just, I can put it on YouTube right now. He's like, you could. I mean, I would not be your friend anymore, but you could do that. I'm like, it's all right here. I wish that I cared about this movie because I'd be so excited, but I'm not.
30 hours of raw footage.
30 hours
Jesus.
Of raw footage, but it's all right there.
Oh, man, that would not go well.
How do you like that, Bill?
By the way, there is a section on the Wikipedia page for Island of Dr. Moreau, simply a section titled Scientific Plausibility.
There is plausibility. I'd like to know. It. There absolutely is plausibility. I mean, it was written obviously way ahead of its time, but it's about, you know, genetic mutations and crossbreeding. It deserves a creepy, well, imagine Denis Villeneuve directing this.
There could be a dark. Wasn't it really silly and tongue in cheek?
It was. You saw the documentary, but it was poorly executed because the fucking inmates were running the asylum.
Fuck. Pretty great.
Val Kilmer. He said something recently about something to do with the Anthony Bourdain death or something. Like how he says horrible things all the time.
He seems to not really care about things.
He doesn't understand things. Like he was saying, he has no kids. I don't think. At least I think it was a Chuck Klosterman essay or interview, and he was explaining that he understands the death of a child better than an actual parent who has lost a child, because he has gone through it as an actor, and therefore he's processed it more than the actual parent who's lost a child. Like, that's Val Kilmer.
You have to believe it. You can't just half-ass say that. You really have to believe it. The documentary Lost Soul, Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau, is legit interesting. Like, fascinating.
It's up there with
Hearts of Darkness.
Hearts of Darkness and I'm drawing blanks on everything. It's been a long goddamn day.
Oh, Jodorowsky's Dune.
Dreams and Desire. What's
Jodorowsky's Dune.
Jodorowsky's Dune's good. It's frustrating. The one that
Lost in La Mancha.
Lost in La Mancha is also frustrating and scary. The Fitzcarraldo one with Burden of Dreams. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's like a top five list right there.
That really
Look
is.
Look at that free tough. Bonus top five.
Do we do a top five documentaries about movies? Because they're not just about a movie.
I just named the five.
The five.
Yeah, that's the five. Hearts of Darkness, number one, of course. All right, let's get out of here.
Is that it? Logan, we're here. The listener top five real quick. Please.
I collected a listener top five, but it was pretty subjective and there weren't any...
Not a lot of consensus.
Not a lot of repeats.
All right. Well, let's hear some interesting choices.
The one that got the most, what was it? We have some of the listener top fives. A Wrinkle in Time is the most recent one.
Okay. That's a great story. I agree with that.
Yeah. Logan's Run. Agreed.
Yeah.
War Dogs.
War Dogs is War good. Dogs. I'm with that on my list.
The Island.
The Island is a great story. People send like clones off to an island to grow parts. Is that a Michael Bay movie?
Usual Suspect.
No, how dare you?
Let's check ground. Facebook. That was Twitter.
I'll burn you to the
ground. All right, we're doing this on the fly.
Pretty much.
Yeah, listeners, thanks for your submissions.
I'll give you some time and I'll read off my also rans. Anderson, bad movie. Remember Tomcats, the movie where the guys get bet on who would get married last. Great little idea for a high concept comedy. Very poorly executed. Slaughterhouse-5 was not a good movie, although it's highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes, but it has not aged well. Great story.
I read the book and then I watched the movie and I don't remember.
Movie's bad.
Yeah.
Lee Daniels' The Butler is a terrible film that had an interesting premise. This butler who's seen decades worth of presidents and administrations.
Was not well executed. Agreed.
R.I.P.D. is a very bad movie, but an interesting concept. An afterlife police officer, afterlife police force.
Sounds really dumb.
What Dreams May Come, not a good movie, but a very interesting concept.
It was visually beautiful.
It was. Sausage Party, I have to say, was very poorly
executed. Not bad. Yeah. Not bad pull.
Any also rants for you?
No, I had a hard time coming up with the five.
Some Ender's Game.
Yeah.
What was the other one?
Last Airbender.
Last Airbender.
Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, it's the rollerblading Wolf Boy.
Rollerball, the remake.
Pretty good.
Public Enemies with Johnny Depp.
That's a good one. Very
it's a shitty movie, yeah.
The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah, it's a bad Pixar movie.
Cloud Atlas.
How dare you?
I agree.
Groupers.
Oh, frustrating.
Who hasn't seen it.
Very frustrating.
I'll go with one more. Let's say Soylent Green.
There you
go. Sucker Punch.
Oh,
Sucker Punch is a great one. Yeah. It's a great inclusion on the list. Because it's like, I like the idea. I did not like the execution at all. All visuals, little substance.
All visuals.
The story was there.
All right, Logan, let's. Anderson's getting tired.
Let's get out of here. Let's
gamble
so
and
done.
Get out of here.
All right, last week you gambled on Ocean's 8 at the time. The Rotten Tomato score was 71%. Anderson bid 73 and Brian 60. Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomato score for Ocean's 8 landed on 67%, which makes Anderson the winner. Yeah.
All right, dude, here's a little favor for you. If you can still find it, hopefully you can. Do yourself a favor and see Upgrade.
Upgrade. Upgrade still playing?
Upgrade. It's a goddamn shame if it's not when there's shit out there. All right, let's get out of here. Upgrade. You see STEM.
All right, this week you're gambling.
See STEM.
STEM.
That's what it should be called.
This week.
Called Upgrade.
You're gambling on Incredibles 2.
Sure don't want to do tag? Landon,
do
you want to do tag?
No, I don't want to do tag. I want nothing to do with tag.
I'm actually really hoping tag is great.
I'm hoping it's at least entertaining.
All right, I got my bet. You ready? Got my vote. My bid. My guess.
What is it?
95.
92.
What's the score there, Logan?
All right. Currently, the week before its release, with 90 reviews, the Rotten Tomato score for Incredibles 2 is 94%.
Right between.
How many more people are going to see this that are considered critics and get to...
Just knock it down. 1 point, boys. That's all I'm asking.
All right, let's go.
1 point.
Let's get out of here. Gots to go.
Thanks, y'all, for listening and downloading. We appreciate it. What else? Who's the listener art this week? Listener art is Kurt L. Kurt L provided our listener art this week, which you can see. Very appropriate. That is the listener.
Would you listen more?
That is from Would You Be My Neighbor? Oh, Would You Be My Neighbor?
You know what else it's from, though? Would You Listen, Mo?
I don't know what that is. Would You Be My Neighbor?
Would You Listen, Mo?
Would you?
Hey, Brian, you ever think about doing that? I really like your baldy one.
That's actually a really good idea.
Hey, why?
I gotta revisit that.
You think maybe you could mention the Film Vault on the...
all the time.
You know, the end of Stern every week, he just... Every night, actually, every day, every morning, he just plugs everyone else's shit.
Well, you know, no one listens to the end of the show. Like when we're doing right now, no one listens to this. People are tuned out.
Hey, everybody.
Kurt L, you can check it out, AndersonandBrian.com. That's where you go if you want to get your tunes heard, like Still Life, Big Folk, Marius Paxcow, and Arcade High. They're our feature artists this week. If you would like to have your song heard or featured or played on the Film Vault, just head on over to AndersonandBrian.com. Contact us. Subscribe on Patreon. You can get bonus content, bonus top fives, bonus spoiler content, and discounts on things like t-shirts, like the one Anderson's wearing right now, mm-hmm. One you'll be getting soon. The Amazon banner is up at the top of AndersonandBrian.com. You can click through, buy whatever you're going to buy. It costs nothing for you, and it helps us a little bit. Film Vault, The Film Vault on Twitter and Facebook. That's where you go to vote on top fives. Have Logan ignore your votes.
Huh.
And until next time.
I did not do any plugging at all of Groupers.
We almost made it the whole way.
San Diego is like a week from tomorrow night. And very, very few people are going to be there, which will be fun. We're going to have a good time. Whoever's there, we're going to have a really good time. We're going to have a party. But right now, very few people are there. So if you're one of those people that hates crowds or something, come on out to Groupers San Diego. Jolt and Joe's. Tickets are $20. Get them over at groupersthemovie.com. It's going to be my second ever screening of this. And then you can weigh in. And, you know, only 400 people have seen this movie ever.
That's insane.
And by the end of, you know, days, hopefully 1,000 people have seen it.
That'd be
nice. Come on out. And if you live in San Diego, I'd love to see you out there. Cool. Groupersthemovie.com. And we do it for Van Gogh.